Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
If you had to think of a quintessential Australian poem, what would it be? My Country by Dorothea McKellar? Clancy of the Overflow by Banjo Paterson? Or anything by Les Murray? My guest tonight has taken on what many of us would see as an almost impossible task, to create a collection of the best Australian poetry. Ah, the dilemma of what to choose and who to leave out. Australian poet Jamie Grant has collated his favourites in a new book called 100 Australian Poems You Need to Know. Welcome to Summer Nightlife, Jamie.
Thank you, Tony.
What inspired you to put this collection together, Jamie?
Well, in one sense, I was inspired by a publisher inviting me to do it. But on the other hand, I suppose you could say I was inspired by 30 or 40 years of reading poetry for my own enjoyment.
And it needed to happen. The top 100 had to be put together.
The number 100 is a magic number in the publishing world.
You had to set a limit somewhere, didn't
yes.
you? The ABC's Philip Adams writes the introduction to your collection. He says all his life poetry defeated him. Is that a common emotion when it comes to poetry?
You often hear people say that, yes, but mostly because people have bad memories of being forced to learn poetry at school. And
what do you think they mean by it?
What they really mean is that they have given up trying to read poetry as if it was any other type of writing.
It's a bit like Shakespeare sometimes. People struggle at school and then maybe later in life they suddenly think, I get it.
That's true. Often there can be a poem that you've read that you don't understand at all, and then you return to it years later and it's absolutely clear.
You've chosen to divide the book into different themes: colonial times, city and bush, drought and war. Why did you choose those particular themes?
Well, they're not really themes, but those are the names I've given each historical period, and it, within those, because the poems are all in chronological order of the author's dates of birth.
Yeah, interesting way to put it together.
And when you do that, you see that poets at different times are often writing about the same sorts of things, whether at the time they're writing about droughts and bush ranges or...
An embarrassment of riches sometimes?
Yes, and on it goes.
You knew you wanted to select 100 poems. Where did you start? Because I understand you did have one rule, one poem per poet. Did that make it easier or harder?
That made it easier, because if I were just to pick my 100 favourite poems of all, they might all be by Les Murray.
So you had to put aside your personal favouritism.
In fact, Les Murray himself has just done a book called The 100 Best Poems of Les Murray, and he's left out 50 of my favourites.
Wow. Oh, well, you have to speak to him about that.
I did. I did speak to him, and he paid no attention, whatever.
They won't be in version two, will they? He's not thinking of a sequel. The poems, as we said, are arranged in order of the author's date of birth, and you say, it seems that it was necessary in the late 19th century for every poet to write about bushrangers. Any poems from that era that really stood out for you?
To me, the modern poets are the ones I enjoy the most, but the one from that era that had an echo in a more recent poet, Judith Wright. Judith Wright wrote a poem called Bullocky, and from much further back there's a poem called The Bullocky's Love Song, which I rather liked, by a poet I've never heard of and have been unable to find out any facts about his life.
Have you been able to attribute all the poems in this collection to the poets?
There's one that is listed as being anonymous, but the rumour is that anonymous was Henry Lawson.
Aha.
So possibly Henry Lawson got two poems in, unlike anybody else.
Do you think did he choose to write it and say by anonymous, do you think?
Well, it may. I'm sceptical about the claim that that he wrote it, because I think he's a more polished writer than the author of The Bastard from the Bush,
right?
Which is one of the favourite sort of rude poems that everybody used to recite.
Yes, I suppose by arranging the poems in the way that you have, though, the collection reflects the evolution of Australian poetry in a way from early ballad metres to free verse. Can you give us a potted history of how Australian poetry has evolved?
Well, it's evolved in relation to the way poetry has evolved right through the world. And in the 19th century, you have a lot of people writing ballad-style poems, just as Kipling was writing them in Britain. And one of the ballad poets who I include actually was better known eventually as a Scottish poet, W.H. Ogilvie. The people who weren't writing ballads were writing sort of romantic-style poetry. All of it rhymed and very regular. And people started to be more irregular in their forms only after the Second World War.
What do you think allowed them to loosen up in that way?
As in the rest of the world, the example of Walt Whitman in America really started people on the idea that you didn't have to write everything in strict forms.
Mm. So the last word of every second line didn't have to rhyme.
Yes. So and then when you come to from the 1970s onward, you're positively discouraged from writing rhyming poems.
Can it evolve even further, do you think? Where could it go?
My impression is that the younger poets today, at least the more talented of them, are tending to turn back to rhyme.
Why?
Because in the end, writing free verse, while it seems easy because you don't have to have regular forms and you don't have to rhyme things, it means that every word has to really be there for a reason.
Mm.
And it makes it, I think the free verse is the most difficult form of poetry to write well. It's the easiest to write badly. But when every word is important and you can't get away with putting things in just for the sake of the rhyme, it's Robert Frost, the American poet, said of free verse that writing free verse was like playing tennis without a net. And I think he had it wrong. I think writing free verse is like finding your way without a map, because if you've got the regular form to follow, you've sort of got a guide to what you're going to say next.
I wonder too, it's one thing to read free verse as against metered verse, but it's a different thing, isn't it, don't read it out loud, I mean, but when it's read out loud, it's performed, or you're listening to someone reading it, the free verse doesn't quite have the lyricism to it, does it? It's a different sounding experience altogether.
It is, yes. And again, you have to be a very good reader to make that a free verse persuasive when you read it aloud.
Back to the book, what place does Indigenous poetry have in the evolution and the history of poetry in Australia?
Well, the Indigenous poem I've chosen is a translation of a thing called the Moonbone Cycle, which is a sort of thousands of years old. And I think that's certainly been a very influential poem on subsequent Australian poets. But the translation does use a bit of the Whitman-type free verse, but it's a wonderful poem all the same.
Right. Now, you're listening to Summer Nightlife with me, Tony Arthur, and with me in the studio is the Australian poet Jamie Grant. He's collated his favourite 100 poems into a new book called 100 Australian Poems You Need to Know. What about the themes outside of bushrangers? For instance, the two world wars are a powerful subject. Can you talk about a poem from World War One or Two that resonated with you, Jamie?
Well, one of my very favourite poems in the book is the one from World War One by a poet called Harley Matthews, and it's called Women Are Not Gentlemen. And it's, again, written very early for Australian poets in a free verse type form, but it's a poem about a group of soldiers at Gallipoli and about a rumour passing among them that the sniper on the hills above them is a woman. And it's just a marvellous poem, just in the physical details of what it's like to be in the trenches and being shot at and the sorts of things soldiers say to each other.
There's some sort of philosophical dilemma about whether they can shoot a woman, is that?
No. They say at one point, it's just like being at home. You can't go out without her watching you.
You also say autobiographical poetry was almost unheard of before the mid-20th century. Why was that?
I don't quite understand it, though. The idea of the personality was something invented by the Romantic poets in the 18th century. Before Keats and Wordsworth came along, nobody wrote about themselves, and all poetry was impersonal and narrative, it tended to be. But particularly after the Second World War, and influenced again by a group of American poets known as the confessional poets, people started to write about themselves and their own lives.
As against characters that they'd heard of or
yes, those. And as against sort of classical themes and episodes from heroic war. I think the two world wars really knocked out people's enthusiasm for writing epics about wars.
I suppose it could have been a way of purging some of the terrible experiences they'd been through, a form of self-counselling maybe.
Perhaps it was, yes.
You've dedicated a chapter to younger poets, and you've called it the generation of XYZ. What's the main difference between contemporary poets and the older generation?
Well, as I've said, a lot of the contemporary poets write free verse. A lot of them write surrealist poems that don't seem to make any sense, but still have beautiful use of language.
Will there always be a place for poetry in our literature?
Always, yes.
What would you like to see happen as far as teaching young people the benefits of this to cut through, I suppose, that image that it does have, that people just say, I just don't get it when they're young and struggle with it. Have we got to change the way it's taught?
Yes, I think young people should be forbidden to read it. I think they'll find it much more exciting if they're not allowed to do it.
Oh.
You see, the trouble is that it has always been forced down people's throats, and that's why people don't like it.
It's been a standard part of a syllabus that
yes.
goes through, that people sort of think, here we go. And maybe even the teachers have their
they have
prejudices.
A lot of them feel the same, yes.
That's an interesting theory. Make it forbidden, and they'll go after the forbidden fruit.
I think that the forbidden is much more attractive to people than the thing that they have to do as a duty.
That's a very interesting theory, Jamie. Now, before we finish up, they are 100 Australian poems. You need to know your favourite 100 poems. Would you read one for us, and which one have you chosen?
I've chosen a poem called Barbecue by Peter Kokan, who is a relatively young poet.
Do we need to know anything about him or the poem before you read it? Or,
well, if you're interested, he was described in the New South Wales Parliament at one stage as Australia's Lee Harvey Oswald. He's the fellow who tried to assassinate the leader of the Labor Party when he was just 20 years old.
This poet?
Yes. He discovered poetry when he was found...
He shot
not...
Arthur Caldwell?
Yes.
He shot Arthur Caldwell.
He was found not guilty on the grounds of insanity, and in the asylum he was sent to for 20 years, he discovered poetry.
So this was written after that incident?
Long after, yes.
Right, okay.
And he writes poetry of absolutely terrifying sanity and precision.
It's titled Barbecue by Peter Kokan and read for us tonight by Jamie Grant.
Which of us will one day sit alone in that last isolation nothing mends, remembering a long-lost afternoon and a casual gathering of friends. The women, milky-breasted, beautiful, watching their children toddle on the grass. The men skylarking with a batten ball until the Sunday sun begins to pass. Decades on, this sun will re-emerge with aching clarity in someone's mind to shake and grieve them in their senile age, and shine the brighter when the eyes are blind. For one amongst us will outlive the rest, and weep to think, perhaps at 95, about this knife-edged brilliance of the past, when all of us were happy and alive. And so, my friends, let's cling together now against the future that we cannot see. Let's love each other, for we cannot know who the condemned survivor is to be.
Barbecue by Peter Kokan, and many people, I'm sure, have been to barbecues and will be going to barbecues over this festive season and holiday period, so a very appropriate choice. Jamie Grant, thank you very much for coming in and telling us all about your book. Do appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
Jamie Grant, the book is called 100 Australian Poems You Need to Know, and it's out now through Hardy Grant.